Can you think of a comparable kind of turnaround from a moribund franchise that has literally just no hope to being basically the presumed favorite until someone, you know, until someone says something else?
Yeah, I honestly can't. It was actually one of the things that I really racked my brain during the proposal. When I was writing the proposal out, I was trying to give an honest, you know, assessment to thinking like, is there anyone else that is comparable to this? Because we've seen teams, you know, are very bad and then they're able to turn it around. And perhaps they win a title, they get to a certain level, but they don't become like all-time elite. And it doesn't happen in 5 years, basically. I think it's completely unprecedented.
You know, basketball maybe lends itself to that. The ability to a quick turn. Yeah, and it's a smaller group of people. One or two people can change that on the court. But you know,
exactly.
I talked to Marcus Thompson last year? I don't know, earlier this year.
April.
Time is
when his book came out.
Yeah, yeah. Time is complete. Yeah, I don't know anymore. We talked, and you know, obviously he focused on Steph Curry. You know, one of the big focuses on your piece. I mean, you talk about sort of every stage of this transition, but it's more about the philosophy than picking one individual event that happened. I'm curious. So it's called Beta Ball. Using the concept of beta, which never quite fully baked, always in flux, yet open to change.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me like that's most good organizations kind of have that general thing. But what is it about Lacob's approach and sort of the new ownership approach and the new management that differentiated that in terms of that philosophy to sort of improving all these different parts of the organization?
I mean, I feel like, you know, this was what he knew. I mean, this was, you know, he was coming from, you know, 25 years in the Valley. You know, he had been a really successful venture capitalist. At the same time, you know, he was a longtime Warrior season ticket holder. So, you know, he had his season tickets for 10 years. He was not, I think people might think, you know, this kind of Johnny come lately or, you know, this deep-pocketed savior. But, you know, this was a guy who understood the culture and he understood what was at stake. And at the same time, I don't feel like they really felt like they had a lot to lose. So it's just about, you know, what is the new market inefficiency? And when they came in, it was technology. You know, I mean, it really wasn't that long ago. They were the fifth team, I think, right in the book to do the sport news system. You know, but they were the first team on the West Coast or the East Coast. I mean, all the other signatories, they were Midwestern teams. And they were teams like San Antonio and Oklahoma City, where they were kind of even known for the analytics. And in Houston, you know, to the extent that any team was known back then for analytics. But, you know, it was about, you know, bringing in the science aspect of it, but it was also about, they had to rebuild the whole culture. I mean, people did not love coming to work. You know, they spent a couple million bucks. They renovated the whole office workspace. You know, they wanted people, it was this idea of like enjoying coming to work. And first they had to make people in the front office and the upstairs believe that. And then they had to make the players believe that. And it's really funny. It's like, I hear this kind of language with the Warriors and I don't really hear this with a lot of other teams. And this is a more of a millennial thing than an NBA thing, but it's this idea that I like coming to work. You know, I like my job. I like my coworkers. These are not things that we're used to hearing NBA players say, but the Warriors say this all the time. And I think it's just really indicative of the way that they've been able to build up that culture from nothing and to sort of fuse it in that idea that like this is like going to be like a Silicon Valley startup. And for all the woes, for all the ways that we shrug our shoulders and we roll our eyes at Silicon Valley, you know, Joe Lacob wasn't coming in to fund a $400 juicer. You know, he was coming in to rebuild a basketball team, and it worked out.
You mentioned the sport view system, and you kind of had a unique happenstance insight because you were in the arena and were taking a look at this. For those who don't know, this is the sort of camera system that allows player tracking sort of has led to this next wave of basketball analytics because you're able to show every single pass and position and kind of learn more about just the spatial dynamics, I guess, of how basketball works. And you were in the arena and you were being shown this by one of the Warriors staffers. And it happened to be, I got this right, it was on the same day that Bob Myers was hired?
Yeah. So this was the final day of the 2010-11 regular season. This was the first, it was the end of the first season where the new ownership had just come in. And yeah, I was up on walking along the catwalks high above Oracle Arena, the Down below, the cheerleaders were practicing their final routine of the year, and there I was with the assistant general manager, Travis Schlink, who was just recently hired as the GM for the Atlanta Hawks. And I was up there with him and a PR guy who also went to Atlanta as well, weirdly enough. But we were up there, and they had just been installed about 2 months before, and they were at a point where they were just starting to get those daily, the spreadsheets. I mean, it was literally just, it looked like this ungainly spreadsheet, and it just, of cells of data. And it's like, what do we do with this? So they didn't even know necessarily what they were going to do with this stuff, but they had the presence of mind to know that they should have it, and that they should start accumulating this data for the day when they know what they're going to do with it. So, yeah, this was a pretty momentous day, it turns out, in history. Not because I was there, but because a few hours later, yeah, they did announce that they were hiring Bob Myers as their assistant general manager. And there were people that scoffed at this. He had no executive experience. He had never worked for an NBA team. He was a Bay Area guy, went to Danville High School, grew up rooting for the Warriors, put himself through night school. He was a walk-on at UCLA, was part of their championship-winning team. But obviously he wasn't going to be an NBA player, but he decided to become a sports agent. He did that for 15 years. And the Warriors, whereas a lot of people would say, oh, this guy's never negotiated any trades, he doesn't understand how it is to run a team. The Warriors looked at that and they said, this is a guy who has had 15 years at the negotiating table. Maybe he was on the other side of it, but that's 15 years of experience nonetheless. And this is a guy who has connections with players, having represented them. This is a guy who knows agents personally because he's worked alongside them. And so this is a guy who understands the transactional world of the NBA. And this is a guy who can grow into that job. And in terms of experience, he actually does have a lot of relevant experience. So they had to think a little bit outside the box. And I think a couple of NBA Executive of the Year awards later, I feel like that decision has pretty much validated itself.
And, anytime there's a drastic turnaround, for better or for worse, in an organization, people try to nail down the turning point. You kind of identified that as the turning point, at least sort of the beginning. Mm-hmm. What was it about him specifically, or that hire, or things that started to happen and fall in line after that made that such a significant, point in this process?
That's a good question. I feel like he really was, in so far as we can actually sort of pinpoint these things, he really was just kind of like the right guy for the job at the right moment. He's very diplomatic. He's a very patient guy. I think I read in the book, he doesn't look like an NBA executive. He looks like a guy who should be working at a surf shop in Half Moon Bay. But, he's very, like I said, he knows his way around the negotiating table, which is really funny because, this is a guy, he was tasked with basically convincing guys to come to Oakland at a time when nobody was coming to Oakland. I think it was actually maybe the summer of 2011. So Bob had just been on the job for maybe a month or two. The Warriors signed DeAndre Jordan to an offer sheet. And so obviously, he ended up, staying with the Clippers. But I remember that was big news. It was like, oh my God, they got DeAndre Jordan just to sign the offer sheet? And obviously everyone knew the Clippers would match, but there's this case where that was as close as they had come in many, many years to attracting a marquee free agent. And then when he was able to convince Andre Iguodala to come in the summer of 2013, although as I say in the book, Andre didn't actually need all that much convincing because Andre was sold on it from the get-go. He liked what the Warriors were doing. He liked having a guy like Bob Myers in there. But I would say in terms of player personnel, Iguodala was the first domino. But in terms of executive, in terms of culture, in terms of all of the other larger pieces, and in terms of Kevin Durant signing, I think Bob Myers, if there was no Bob Myers, I don't think Kevin Durant would be on the Golden State Warriors today.
You mentioned Iguodala. He's always sort of struck me as the key in changing that tide, but also as sort of the perfect guy because they really needed that defensive identity, but they also really, he personally had so much interest in the tech world. It was just such a nice fit for him to come over. It seems so obvious in retrospect, but I remember at the time thinking, oh my God, they got Andre Iguodala. It seemed like such a, an unlikely thing for that team to ever actually pull off. I know it had been rumored, but you just assumed it wasn't going to work out.
The funny part about that deal is that the Iguodala part, Iguodala was the easy part. The hard part was creating the salary cap space to bring in Iguodala. I mean, they had so many terrible contracts. That was really the hard part. Selling Andre was easy.
Yeah.
It was about, convincing other teams like Utah. Utah really was the one that made, if you want to blame another team for the Warriors' rise, you can blame Utah because they're the ones that agreed to take the salaries of, I think, Richard Jefferson and Andres Biedrin, but they dumped over $20 million in salary. And that's really the only reason why they were able to execute what was a sign-in trade for Iguodala. But if Utah Jazz don't play ball, and believe me, they were compensated with enough draft picks, they made it worth their while. But if Utah Jazz don't say yes at that point, we're probably not talking today.
Iguodala has always stuck out to me from the player standpoint, obviously the coaching standpoint, watching the Warriors hit something of a ceiling, but before Steve Kerr got there, and then just blow straight through that. I'm curious. I've talked to some other people about, you know, Steve in particular, and I've talked to Luke Walton about him, and he's part of this consortium, this positive, you know, coaching consortium that started in the Bay Area. You know, how much of it is X's and O's and unlocking this sort of positionless defense, and how much of it is he brings just a completely different mentality and opens people up to being their best selves?
It's a good question. I definitely think it's more the latter. I think if you were to sort of trace the evolution, which I think you could sort of do as you thumb through the book, you know, I think in terms of X's and O's, it was more important when Mark Jackson came in as coach, because this was a team that you could say was undeveloped, you could say in some ways was undisciplined. This was a team that needed to learn its identity, to learn how to use the three-point shot in such a lethal way. They really did need to learn sort of all those things in terms of on the basketball court. When Steve came in, like you said, they were a 51-win team. This was a team that, yeah, you thought maybe they were kind of scratching their ceiling. How much farther could they go? And you saw a guy like Steve come in who just took the culture and embraced it, but also empower these guys, you know, to be their best selves, you know, to put them all in a position to succeed, to bring in the right kind of coaches. You know, Steve wanted to hire David Blatt. You know, David Blatt was going to be Steve's number one assistant until the Cavs came in and they said, no, we want to hire him as our head coach. And Steve, you know, I mean, the Warriors, they probably could have made it difficult for him, but they said, no, you have a great opportunity here. Go do it. Funnily enough, they, you know, meet in the finals a year later, and no one could have predicted that, but to bring in the right kind of coaching staff that is going to work with these players and is going to allow them to feel like no matter what they're bringing to the table, you know, they don't have to do 20-10. You know, they don't have to, you know, keep their turnovers down to, you know, these infinitesimal numbers. Just go out and play the kind of basketball that you're used to, and your teammates are going to pick up for wherever your weaknesses are and just play to your strengths. And that was the kind of basketball that they learned in that first season. They spread the floor out. You know, they're shooting threes at a clip that we've never seen before in the NBA. And a lot of that comes from confidence. It comes from happiness. It comes from, you know, believing in the culture that has been ingrained here. And so a lot of those pieces were in place. But like I said, I really feel like Steve come in really was kind of the final piece of that whole puzzle.
Eric, we could talk all day, but I know that you have to go talk to other people all day because the book is out today. It's Beta Ball, how Silicon Valley and Science Built One of the Greatest Basketball Teams in History. Eric Malinowski, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.